thank you for that warm introduction. I didn't understand the first part, but I assume that it wasn't a contradiction to the second part. We start with something with this coming week's Sedra. Yaakov Avinu is returning from the house of Lavan, a married man with children, and he sends angels to confront Esav and see what his intentions are. And the rabbis castigate Yaakov for doing this. And they apply the pasuk in Mishle, Ma'achez bo'ozne kelev mecharcher al riv lo lo. A person who puts his head into an argument that is not his is like pulling a dog's ears. If you leave the dog alone, he'll leave you alone. You pull his ears, you're looking for trouble. Why do you have to look for problems? Yaakov could have tiptoed back into Eretz Yisrael without the knowledge of Esav, gone home, and lived quietly and peacefully. Why did he have to confront Esav? So the rabbis say that Yaakov was wrong by confronting Esav because try to avoid problems. Don't look for problems in this world. Later on in the Sedra, it says that Yaakov Avinu puts his family safely on the other side of Ma'avar Yabok. And all of a sudden, Yaakov is alone, leaves his family, and he's alone. And someone comes and wrestles with him. So we're all familiar with the famous Chazal that the wrestling partner was Soro Shel Esav, Esav's spiritual counterpart, the Satan. But the Rashbam says something different. The Rashbam says that Yaakov Avinu realized that Esav had no contention with his family, only with him. So he put his family safely on the other side of Ma'avar Yabok, and he tried to run away and not confront Esav. And his angel, his guardian angel, Michael, came to prevent him from running away and force him to confront Esav. Now, on the surface, these two things seem to be contradictory. On the one hand, the rabbis fault Yaakov for confronting Esav, and the Rashbam says that when Yaakov tries to avoid confronting Esav, he's forced to confront him. So which is it? The answer, I think, is very simple. A person should not look for problems in this world. If you can avoid them, avoid them. Because God will provide you with challenges and problems as much as you possibly could need. Right? You don't have to look for your own. They're going to find you one way or the other. And there's a difference between problems that the Ribbono Shel Olam gives you and ones that you create for yourself. The Ribbono Shel Olam never gives people challenges or tests that potentially he can't deal with and overcome. And if the Ribbono Shel Olam knows that you can't overcome it, impossible, you don't have that potential, then you're not held responsible for them altogether. But that's up to the Ribbono Shel Olam. When you look for problems, you may find some that you can't deal with. So don't look for problems, don't create problems. However, once the problem is there, you can't run away from it. You have to face it. And you have to solve it. And solving a problem is not always the same way. Sometimes solving a problem is by changing the situation. Like Rachmana Litzlan, someone is sick, you go to the doctor, and he takes away the sickness. You solve the problem. You change the situation. Sometimes that's not possible. The situation will not change. Rachmana Litzlan, someone has a leg amputated. So there's not going to be that the situation is going to change. The leg's going to grow back. So there, the way to solve the problem is to learn how to cope with it, to learn how to live with it. That's sometimes how you solve a problem. You learn to accommodate yourself to the situation. Sometimes that's impossible. You can't live with the situation. So then you change the situation completely and you get out of it. But that's not called running away. That is a calculated decision that you make that this situation has to change. I'll give you an example of all three. You have a problem with your workplace. Your boss is a problem. Okay. And every day you go to work and it really is miserable for you. One way of solving the problem is sit down with the boss and talk to him and see if you can change the situation so it's not miserable anymore for you. That's one way. You sit down with the boss, you get nowhere. Then you have to make a decision. Is the job worth enough for you to stay there despite the fact that it's a miserable situation, but it's bearable? So then you have to learn to cope with the situation. That's a possibility. It's another way of solving the problem. You change. The situation's not going to change. But then there's a third possibility. You can't live with that. You can't get up every day and go to work, right? And it's not worth it. Just not worth the wages to be so miserable. So then you find a new job. But you're not running away. It's a conscious decision after you've tried everything. Another example of running away, which Chazal say you can't run away from problems, and making a decision to get out of that venue, change your venue to get away from the problem, but it's not running away. Person wakes up in the morning, and they say that they are totally despondent, and they can't face another day. They pull the covers over their head and stay in bed the whole day. That's running away from problems. Another person gets up in the morning. He says, I really have a lot of problems to deal with, and I just don't have the koach to do it today. I think if I get a good rest today, tomorrow I can face the problems with a greater clarity and greater strength. He pulls the cover over his head and stays in bed the rest of the day. The first person is running away from his problems. The second person is making a decision that at this point I need not to face them because it'll give me the ability to face them at a later time. So that is the first lesson in Chazal. A person should avoid making for himself problems. But once they're there, you have to face them. And the way you face them and the way you solve them is not always the same way. Sometimes it's by changing the situation. Sometimes it's by learning how to cope with it. And sometimes it's by getting out of that situation completely. Okay, I'm going to tell you now some very depressing medrashim, if you don't understand them properly. So I want you, B'li Neder, to give me your word that you are not going to leave until I explain these medrashim. I did not come here to make people depressed. So if you hear the medrash, and the way the medrash is extremely depressing, right, and you don't wait here to hear my answer, then after 120 years, don't blame me for making you depressed. Because I told you to stick around and you'll understand what the Medrash is really talking about. The first Medrash is a Rashi, brings down this Medrash, which I'm sure you're all familiar with. The other two, I'm sure you've never heard. First Medrash is in 2 weeks from now, Sedra, Parshas Vayeshev. Rashi says, Bikesh Yaakov, Leishev V'shalva, Vayeshev Yaakov. Yaakov wanted to sit in peace and quiet. He wanted a little peace, serenity, quiet in his life. Omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Rabbanu Shalom said, Lo dayin l'tzadikim ma shemesukin lahem l'olam haba. It's not enough for tzadikim what they have in the world to come. Umevakshim leishe b'shal v'bolam azen. They want to take it easy in this world too. Miyad kofetz alav rogzo shel Yosef. Immediately he was faced with the agitation of Yosef. Yosef was taken and sold, and he thought he was dead. And the Rabbanu Shem brought him terrible tzoras. Very depressing Rashi. The Rabbanu Shem can't forgive a tzaddik to have a little peace and quiet in this world, because he has the next world. Lo hakol zochim l'shtei shulchanos. Not everybody gets this world and the next world, but not everybody doesn't. What would be so terrible if the Rabbanu Shem let Yaakov Avinu have a little peace and quiet in this world? And this question, the Tosfos Bracha, the Torah Tamima has another sefer called Tosfos Bracha, and he asked this question. What's so terrible? Why is the Rabbanu Shel Olam not forgiving Yaakov Avinu a little shalva in this world? What's so terrible? He says there's a terrible printer's error in the Rashi, because he found a medrash that says the same thing, but one word is different. And it makes all the difference, he says. The medrash he found says the following. Bikesh Yaakov leishe v'shalva. Omar ha-sotan. L'dayim l'tzadikim ha-shem esukun lahem l'olam ha-bo. U'mevakshim leishe v'shalva b'olam ha-zeh. It's not the Rabbonu Shalom chas v'shalom. It's the sotan who can't forgive Yaakov a little peace and quiet. I don't understand this Tosfos Bracha, because the sotan does not run this world. God does. All the sotan can do is bring up a complaint. But if God disagrees, then he does not do what the sotan complains about. So in the end, God agreed with the sotan. And he brought Rogzo Shel Yosef, the agitation of Yosef, against Yaakov. So we're back to where we started. What difference does it make if the sotan brought it up or the Rabbanu Shalom brought it up? In the end, the Rabbanu Shalom agreed. So we're back to Omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now I'm going to tell you two more depressing medrashim. The medrash says, Medrash Tanchuma in Parsha Shmini, Lo ikev simcha lo adam ba'olam hazeh. Joy, happiness, serenity, shalva, never remain for anybody in this world too long. And where do we learn that from? There was a woman in history who had a tremendous day of simcha. Greatest simcha that any woman ever had. Her name was Elisheva Bas Aminadav, and the day was the day that the Mishkan was consecrated. Her husband was consecrated as the first Kohen Gadol in history. Imagine what a nachas, right? What kind of nachas she shept. My husband is the Kohen Gadol. Her children, her four children, were consecrated as the first regular Kohanim. What nachas a mother had. Her brother-in-law was Moshe Rabbeinu, who was doing all this consecrating. Her brother was Nachshon ben Aminadav, who brought the first sacrifice in history in the Mishkan. So she was surrounded with tremendous nachas. She was beaming. And you know what happened that day? Two of her sons were killed. Nadav and Avihu. So we learn from there that simcha does not remain for anybody too long in this world. That's very depressing. But I'll tell you, the next one's even more depressing. The Medrash continues. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, he said, I was very happy with my creation. Yismach Hashem b'ma'asov. And I didn't remain happy too long, because Adam and Chava sinned, and they made me very unhappy. Says the Rabbanu Shel Olam, if I could not remain happy in this world, nobody's going to remain happy. Now that is really depressing. First of all, it sounds like spite. That doesn't sound like the Rabbanu Shel Olam. The Rabbanu Shel Olam says, I couldn't remain happy, that's it. Nobody's going to remain happy in this world. What kind of spite does the Rabbanu Shalom do? What is the Medrash talking about? But this bears out, as a Rav seeing many, many simcha, there's always some kind of monkey wrench in the simcha. Always something. The simcha, sometimes it's something small, and sometimes Rachmana Litzlan is something big. I remember we had, when I lived in Cleveland, so we had our first four children, all of them girls. For each one I prepared a Dvar Torah for the bris and filed it away. The truth is, Baruch Hashem, we had those four girls first, because after that we had six boys, and without those four girls, I don't know how my wife would have survived without four helpers in the house. But in any case, we moved to Miami, and the first year we were in Miami, we had twin boys. As you can imagine, the simcha, right? That's the four girls, twin boys, in a new community. And we had a twin bris. Before the bris, one of my balabatim, who was a doctor by profession, was also an amateur photographer. So he said, Rabbi, please give me the kavod of taking the pictures at the bris. Don't hire a photographer. Just let me take pictures at the bris. I'm an amateur photographer. So I said, fine, save me a few dollars. And he told me that he was an amateur photographer. He knew what he was doing. So he took all the pictures. A week went by. He didn't come with the pictures. 2 weeks. In those days, for those of you who are not that old, they used to develop pictures. They used to have something called film that went in a camera. And you would take the pictures, and it would take a while to get them. You didn't see them immediately as you took them or whatever. And so I figured it was taking time to develop the thick pictures. Finally, about 3 weeks later, he comes to my office looking very, very scared. He says, Rabbi, I have something to tell you. None of the pictures came out. There was either something wrong with the film or he forgot to put film in the camera, something. There's no pictures. So I told him, you know what? I'm a little bit happy with that. Because Baruch Hashem was such a big simcha, and I knew this medrash, that there's always something that goes wrong with a simcha. I was a little bit afraid, maybe I can't handle it. But I can handle not having the pictures. Because people in our family had these little box cameras or whatever, and they also took pictures, so we had some pictures of the bris. So if this is what the Rabbanu Shalom had in mind, in order that the simcha shouldn't be complete, that I could handle. But that's the medrash. Very, very depressing medrashim. So what does it mean? In order to understand it, I want to tell you another medrash. The medrash says like this. I'm going to paraphrase it, but this is a medrash in Koheles Rabbah on the pasuk Me'uvas lo yuchal liskon. There are certain things in this world that are impossible to repair, that they are crooked and can never be repaired. And the Medrash gives an example. There were two Rishoyim, two wicked people in this world that were partners in crime. They stole, they murdered, terribly despicable people. And one of them died, and he went to Gehenna. And he was suffering in Gehenna for, it doesn't say how long, until one day he saw that they were escorting the neshama of his partner into Gan Eden. So he calls the angel that is appointed over the neshamas in Gehenna, and he says, there's been a computer error. That's my partner. When I murdered, he murdered. When I stole, he stole. If I belong in Gehenna, so does he, so bring him here. And if he belongs in Gan Eden, so do I. Take me out of here. The angel comes back and says, I checked on it. There's no computer error. He belongs there and you belong here. He says, I get it. He bribed somebody. Just tell me who and how much and get me out of here. The angel says, I'm sorry, but there is no bribery here. She says, then why is he in Gan Eden? I'm in Gehenna. She says, because you don't know what happened after you died. You see, you dropped dead in the street one day, and people didn't want to have anything to do with you. So they left your body rot in the street for 3 days. After 3 days, some benevolent person kicked your body into a hole in the side of the road, and that's where you're buried. When your partner saw this, it made such an impression on him that he started to rethink his whole life. Is this the way I want to end up? Nobody wants to bury me? I get thrown into a hole in the side of the road. And eventually he repented, and he died a totally righteous man. So he's in Gan Eden, and you're in Gehenna. Now, whenever I say this medrash over, and there are women there, I have to add the following. No man ever asked me the question, so for the men, this is not necessary. But the women are thinking, and I'm sure I'm not wrong, this is not fair. Because the second guy had somebody to learn from, and the first guy didn't. Anybody thinking that? Men? I'm sure there's no men thinking about it. Why? Because men understand that a medrash is a medrash. It's not coming here to tell me the life story of both of these people. It's bringing out a message. But the women want to know the life story of everyone of here. Let me tell you, the medrash just wants to tell you a message. The first guy had somebody that he could have learned from, and he didn't. But the medrash doesn't tell me the whole life story of these people. It just wants to bring across the message. So you got the message, right? So the guy says, oh, that's great. I thought it's going to cost me money. I'll also do tshuva. Right? Believe me, if I would have known where I'm going to end up, I never would have done it. I regret it. I won't do it again. Chatosi, avisi, poshati, get me out of here. The malach tells him, I'm sorry, but it's a little too late. You can't do tshuva here. You should have done tshuva before you came here. Don't you know, the malach said, that the world you came from is like Erev Shabbos, and the world you're in now is like Shabbos. If you prepare a meal Erev Shabbos, you have to what to eat on Shabbos. You didn't prepare anything Erev Shabbos. You didn't do tshuva before you came here. Now you want to do tshuva and prepare the meal on Shabbos? Too bad. Can't have a meal now. It's too late to prepare the meal on Shabbos. You should have prepared it before. Before you came to this world, you should have done your tshuva. You should have repented. And the malach continued, and don't you know, the world you came from is like the dry land, and the world you're in now is like the sea. If you supply your boat on the dry land, then you're in the middle of the sea, you have what to eat. But you didn't supply your boat, you sailed with an empty boat. Now you're in the middle of the ocean, and you want to get supplies. There are no supermarkets in the middle of the ocean. It's too late now to supply your boat. You can't do tshuva now. And don't you know, the angel said, the world you came from is like the city, and the world you're in now is like the desert. If you prepare a survival kit in the city, you can survive the desert. You went into the desert without a survival kit. You didn't prepare anything in the city. Now it's too late to get a survival kit in the middle of the desert. And the man realizes this is something mu'uvas lo yuchal lishkon. He can't correct the situation, and he bemoans his fate. That is the medrash. Two things bothered me about this medrash. One is the angel gives the person three different analogies of how this world compares to the next world. Erev Shabbos and Shabbos, the dry land and the sea, and the city and the desert. There is a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos that describes the analogy between this world and the next world. The Mishnah says, "Ha'olam hazeh doma leprozdor bifnei ha'olam haba hashkein atzmecha beprozdor kedei shetikonish letraklin." This world is compared to a preparation room to a castle. Prepare yourself in the preparation room, and then you can get into the castle. Why didn't the Malach tell him a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos instead of just three analogies? Why didn't he tell him, didn't you know the world you came from was the preparation room, and this world is the castle? You didn't prepare yourself in the preparation room. You can't get into the castle. Why did he tell him three analogies and not tell him a Mishnah? And the second question is, I'm sure the guy got the message after the first analogy. Basically, it's saying the same thing in three different ways. Why was it necessary to tell him three different analogies? One would have been enough. Years ago, I said this medrash over in my moshav, And one of my balabatim, who now is my mechutin, said to me, Rabbi, you don't understand. That's Gehenna, listening to long drushes that aren't necessary. I forgive him for that, and our children are married. But that's not the reason. I think the answer is the following. You have to know what this world is all about. And that is what it says in Pirkei Avos. Ha'olam hazeh domeh leprozdor bifnei ha'olam haba. Let's analyze that comparison. Why do you build a preparation room to a castle? Only for one purpose, to prepare to go in the castle. It's not built for any other purpose. What do you equip it with? What do you put into that room? Things that will prepare you to go to the castle. Hairbrushes, hair dryers, whatever. You don't put ping pong tables in that room. Because the purpose that the room was built was to prepare to go in the castle. And what do you do in that room? Only one thing. Prepare to go to the castle. Nothing else. It wasn't made for any other purpose. It's not equipped for any other purpose. And it's not used for any other purpose. That is this world. Because really, this world shouldn't have been created. God's intention in creating the world was chesed. God wanted to shower his goodness on a creation that could receive that goodness, which is an intimate relationship with God eternally. And that's what we call Olam Haba, the world to come. Tzadikim yoshvim v'atroseim v'rosheihem v'nehenem miziv ha'shchina. Where the tzadikim sit, people who merit that reward that God wanted to give, and they bask in the pleasure of God's presence. That is the ultimate spiritual enjoyment and reward that God intended when he created what's called our souls. So what do you have this world for? Why don't he just create our souls and create that relationship and give us that tremendous enjoyment and pleasure eternally and fulfill his will of wanting, since he is the ultimate good, he wanted to shower that goodness on a creation that could receive it. Because God knew that if he would give it unearned and undeserved, it wouldn't be the ultimate pleasure. Because things that people don't earn, they don't appreciate as much as people things they do earn. And it's not just earning. We don't earn our share in the world to come. We create it. Because what you create, you appreciate even more than what you earn. Example. You've been looking forward to getting this plush reclining chair for your birthday. And you're hoping that your Aunt Matilda will give you that chair for your birthday. And sure enough, your birthday comes and Aunt Matilda gives you the chair. And you sit in it. You'll appreciate it. You'll enjoy it. What happens though if Aunt Matilda decides to give you a sweater instead of the chair? You don't have your chair. And you really want that chair. And you don't have the money to buy it. So you go out and get a job. And you work for a month hard to earn the money to buy the chair. And after a month, you get your paycheck, and you go out and you buy the chair, and now you sit in it. Do you think you'd enjoy it more than if somebody gave it to you as a present? Of course. You worked 30 days in order to earn the money to buy this chair. You appreciate it more. What happens if they don't sell the chair? So you have to plant trees, nurture them till they're big enough to cut down for lumber, cut them into lumber and make the frame of the chair, mine iron, make it into nails and knock the frame together, raise sheep, shear their wool to make the stuffing for the chair, raise cotton and make the upholstery of the chair, and now you sit in it. You appreciate it even more. You made it. So what you get for free, you don't appreciate as much as what you earn, and what you earn, you don't appreciate as much as what you create. So in order that the world to come should be totally appreciated, God said, I want you to create it. How so? I'm going to put your soul into a physical world in a body distanced from me. And I'm going to make you create the relationship with me instead of me creating the relationship with you. How do we do that? Torah and mitzvahs are the guideline, but it's not just Torah and mitzvahs. Bechol drochecho do'ehu. Every single second that a person is in this world, he can do things, everything, eating, drinking, sleeping, watching a soccer game, anything. He can do it in a way that makes him more godlike or in a way that makes him less godlike. How do you know what's godlike and not? That's what we have a Torah and mitzvahs for. Tells you what kinds of things are godlike and what things are not. But behold, rochecho do'ehu, every single thing a person does, kol ma'asecha yiyu l'shem shamayim, das is a chibur, it's a connection. You can connect yourself to the Ribbono shel Olam every second in this world. Every second. And that is the reason why this world was created. To enable a person to create his Olam Haba. That's what the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos means. Olam hazeh dome leprozdor bifnei olam haba. It's a preparation room. There's no other purpose for it. This world was not created for any other purpose except to avail us the opportunity to create our world to come. And therefore there is nothing in the world, nothing, no insect that somehow God knew would enable people to create their Olam Haba. How? I can't tell you. But that's the Ribbono Shel Olam's Chochmah. He knew exactly what had to be created in order to create a world that availed people the ability to make that relationship with him. And therefore, there's nothing that a person should do in this world except prepare for Olam Haba. That doesn't mean to sit in a corner and say Tillim. It means to live a natural, normal life, but to make sure that every single thing you do in every aspect of life, in every area of life, is done in a way that makes you more godlike and not less godlike. That's all. But that is the purpose of every second in this world. And every second in this world, a person can create more and more Olam Haba. There's no limit. In mathematics, there's always another whole number. There's an infinite amount of numbers, but there's also an infinite amount of fractions between every number. So in mathematics, there's an infinite amount of infinities. So if there can be in mathematics an infinite amount of infinities, when it comes to Olam Haba, there can be an infinite amount of eternities. So every single second, you can create more and more Olam Haba. The Gemara says that there was a infamous Russia, Eliezer ben Durdoi. And something happened to him at the moment he was involved in a sin. And it shocked him into changing his whole life completely and to becoming a repentant Baal Tshuva. And it was so intense that he died from the experience. And a bas kol resounded, Ashrecha Reb Elazar ben Durdoi, that you have gained entry into your Olam Haba. When Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, the compiler of the Mishnah, heard this, he cried. And he said, Yeshkona Olamo B'sho Achas. It's possible for a person to acquire his world to come in 1 second. So the Telzer Rosh Yeshiva asked, what was he crying about? He should have been ecstatic. You can get your Olam Haba in 1 second. What's the cry about it? He said because he realized at that second that every single second in this world you can acquire your Olam Haba. There's no limit. And you can acquire more and more and more every second. And how many seconds do we let slip through our fingers that we don't acquire anything? That's something to cry about. So it comes out that the whole purpose of this world, there is no other purpose, is to avail us the opportunity to create the world to come. And again, that includes the entire gamut of existence. Every single thing a person does, he can do in a way that makes him more like the Ribbono Shel Olam. Everything, eating, drinking, entertainment, leisure, everything can be done in a way that makes you more godlike or less godlike, but that is what this world is all about. There's nothing in this world that is done, that is exists for a different purpose. It's all for that purpose. I'm going to have to stop for a second and say something parenthetical, because I'm sure that many of you are thinking of the following question. And that is, if that's the whole purpose of this world, because people don't appreciate what they don't earn or what they don't create, and therefore God had to create this world so we would appreciate Olam Haba because we earned it and created it, God could have saved a lot of money and a lot of time. He didn't have to create this world. He just had to change one rule. He should have created neshamos that can appreciate what they don't earn and what they don't. Who made up that rule? That people appreciate what they earn and what they create more than what they get for free. God, can he change the rules? Can he make a neshama that can appreciate what it doesn't earn and doesn't create? Would save a lot of time, a lot of money. Anybody bothered by that question? Okay, now you are. The answer is that there is no answer to that question. I can tell you something that Ramchal seems to say in another place, but in the end, bottom line, there's no answer to that question. And let me explain to you why there's no answer. That is also an answer. Our minds can only fathom that which is in our, within our, framework. Okay, I'll give you two examples. Close your eyes, not too tightly, because I don't want to be the only person awake over here. And imagine nothing. Nothing. Okay? Close your eyes, and in your mind is nothing. There are people who go through life like that for years. Okay? You have in your mind nothing. Take your hand, and in your mind's eye, where you're picturing this nothing, put your hand into the nothing. Your hand is now in that nothing. That's not nothing. That's space. Space is something. Now try again. Close your eyes and imagine no space. Don't try. You get a headache. Why can't you imagine no space? Because we have no frame of reference to no space. We live in a world where there's always space. We can't imagine anything that's out of our frame of reference. I'll give you another example. Imagine something you never saw and you never heard about. It's impossible. What can you imagine? A monster with 10 legs, 5 arms, 6 heads, but heads, arms, and legs you've seen and heard about. We're talking about imagining something you never saw and never heard about. It's impossible. You have no frame of reference to such a thing. You can't possibly imagine it. So how do we imagine God? The answer is we don't. Our entire frame of reference to God is only after creation. And that, even that we don't say. Yud-Kei Vav-Kei means God is the creator. But any name for God before creation doesn't exist. He's called Ein Sof, right? Which is infinity, which is not a name. It means I don't understand what I'm saying. I have no way of referring to it. We can only refer to God as he relates to us within creation. God outside of creation, we can't relate to him. We relate to God inside creation. That's where there we have names for him. We know that he exists beyond creation, but we have no frame of reference for that. And therefore, the Mishnah says that you're not allowed to ask what came before the world, what's beyond the universe, not because it's prohibited, but because it's impossible, because it's out of our frame of reference. So why bother asking questions that have no answers? And therefore, we can't understand why God created the world the way he did, because that is a question on God's mind before creation. Why did he create it the way he did? And that's out of our frame of reference. The most we can do is say, once God created the world the way he did, what can we understand about it? So to ask why God couldn't have created the world differently, That's a question that's beyond our comprehension. So we're stuck. Okay, but that's the way God created the world, that people appreciate what they earn. For whatever reason that God created the world like that, that's why he needed to create this world in order to make the next world totally a chesed, a kindness that's totally appreciated. Let's go back to the Medrash. So the Malach said, what am I going to tell this gangster? Didn't you know the entire purpose of this world is to prepare for the next world? Of course he didn't know that. And he doesn't know it now either, because when he dies, doesn't become a big philosopher, becomes dead. That's it. Rishoyim afilu bepisko shel gehenom, einam chosrim. So he's not going to tell him, didn't you know that the whole purpose of this world was to prepare for the next world? Of course he didn't know that. So why waste your breath? So the Malach said to him, look, maybe you didn't understand what the real purpose of the world you came from is. Maybe in your mind, this world was like Erev Shabbos, and the next world is like Shabbos. It's not the same thing. Erev Shabbos, you eat breakfast. You may go to work for part of the day. The entire purpose of Erev Shabbos is not to prepare for Shabbos. Usually it's the last few minutes of Erev Shabbos that people are rushing to prepare for Shabbos. But maybe that you understood, that a good portion of this world is to prepare for the next world. Look like, just like a good portion of Erev Shabbos is to prepare for Shabbos. And even if that you didn't understand, and in your mind this world and the next world were like the dry land and the sea, equal. Dry land's a nice place, the sea is a nice place if you're in a boat. But you knew that your boat was going to sail. Why didn't you supply it? And even if that you didn't understand, and in your mind this world was the main thing, this is the city, and the next world was a desert to you, desolate, meaningless, but you knew everybody goes into that desert someday. Why didn't you at least prepare a survival kit? Must be either that you didn't believe or you didn't care, so you deserve to be where you are. So the Malach told him, the real connection between this world and the next world is what it says in Pirkei Avos. He didn't waste his time telling him that, because he surely didn't understand that. But whatever he thought about this world vis-a-vis the next world, at least he should have prepared. And that already is a reason why he's where he is. In any case, comes out that every single second that a person is in this world, you can create eternity. That's what this world is all about. And every second that a person does things that have no connection to making their souls more God-like, and again, it applies to every single thing in life, including watching a soccer game. Everything. If you do it with the right intention, then you are creating Olam Haba. Do it with the wrong intention, you may be destroying your Olam Haba. Now let me tell you a story from my youth. I must have been about 10 years old when this occurred. The supermarket in my neighborhood had a contest. And first prize in the contest was 15 minutes to go in the supermarket and take off the shelves whatever you could for free. A woman won this contest, and they invited the whole neighborhood to come and watch her claim her prize. So I remember as a 10-year-old, my two brothers, Aleihem HaShalom, went with me. We went to see this woman claim her prize. I remember that she came with special sneakers, gym shoes that she had bought so she could run fast through the supermarket. She had two carts, one on each arm, so she would have plenty of place to put the things that she would grab off the shelves. And this is what before GPSs, she had a map of the supermarket attached to something around her head so she could see it in front of her, with the places in the supermarket where the more expensive items were marked off. So she'd go to there first. And they told the woman the following. We are going to say, ready, get, set, go, and we're going to start this stopwatch. You have exactly 15 minutes from the time we say go to grab whatever you can. And then we're going to blow a whistle at the end of the 15 minutes, and anything you grab after that is ours. So you have 15 minutes, start grabbing, and when you hear the whistle, stop. So they say to her, ready, get set, go. And the woman starts to run like a meshugana through the supermarket. Within 5 minutes, she is sweating, panting, breathing heavily. Now imagine if somebody would go over to her and say, lady, you look tired. Here's a chair. Have a seat for a while. What do you think she would say? Are you out of your mind? I have 15 minutes to grab what I can. And you want me to sit down and waste some of those minutes? Nothing doing. Come to me in another 10 minutes when they blow the whistle. I'll sit here for the rest of my life. But not now. Now's not the time to take it easy. Now let's go back to Rashi. Bikesh Yaakov leishev b'shalva. The problem was not the shalva. The problem was not the serenity and peace and quiet. There's nothing wrong with asking for serenity, peace, and quiet. There is nothing in that pasuk that even hints to serenity, peace, and quiet. Just says, Vayeshev Yaakov. Vayeshev does not mean to sit. It means to tarry. Yaakov wanted to remain with peace and quiet. A person has peace and quiet in his life. He shouldn't take it easy and be complacent. He should now has the ability to put his entire efforts into being active and dynamic and creating his world to come. So you don't sit in complacence and take it easy. If you have the ability not to have problems from the outside, so put your efforts into creating Olam Haba. Do something. This is not a world to sit down. You have 15 minutes to grab. It's a short life. It's not the time to sit down. There's plenty of time to lie down and to take it easy after 120 years. Go to the cemetery, you'll see people taking it easy, lying down. This is not the world to do that. This is the world to be dynamic, to be active. Sure, a person can have serenity and quiet, but you don't remain like that. You use those good circumstances to be dynamic and active and to do and to accomplish. Now we're going to say the Rashi with the same words, just a different intonation, and it's a completely different idea. Bikesh Yaakov leishev b'shalva. Yaakov Avinu wanted to remain at rest. Take it easy, a few seconds, that's all. I just need a breather. Omar HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Not like we said before, Lodayin L'tzadikim Hashem Asukim L'om Abo. It's not enough what they have in the world to come. They want this world too. No, that's not how you read it. Read it the following way. Omar HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Lodayin L'tzadikim Hashem Asukim L'om Abo. It's never enough what they already have in the world to come. They can always create more. And he wants to take it easy. It's like the woman sitting down in the middle of the 15 minutes. It's counterproductive. Somebody will come over to her and tell her, what are you sitting down? Get up to grab. In another 10 minutes, you can sit down. That's what it means. That's what the other medrash means too. HaKadosh Baruch Hu saw that Elisheva Bas Aminadav felt accomplished. Complete. Nothing more in this world I have to do. My husband, my children, my brother, my brother-in-law. And she just said that's it. No more, nothing more that I can possibly accomplish. I've reached the pinnacle. And the Rabban Shalom said, I have to do something, not for her, because of her that her children died. They died for their own reason. But it affected her in a positive way, that it let her know that she hasn't reached the pinnacle. It agitated her to the point where she had to be dynamic and active again. Because it's counterproductive for a person to feel that he's reached it, and there's nothing more to do in this world, because then this world is worthless. And that's the second medrash too. When God created the world, he could have created robots that always did what he wanted, and he always would have been happy. But God said that's not the purpose of this world. The purpose of this world is that people should have free choice, and they should be able to make me not happy. Because I want them to earn their world to come, and in order to do that, they have to have the ability to do what's right and do what's wrong. So when I created the world, I could have remained happy forever. But that wasn't the purpose of the world. And therefore, because that wasn't the purpose of the world, nobody's going to remain happy in this world and feel they've made it, because that's counterproductive. That's what God's saying. It's not spite. It's just telling us what the purpose of this world was. Purpose of the world was not to have a blissful world where God is always happy because everybody's doing the right thing, right, and have no free choice, a bunch of robots, so there was no purpose for this world. It's just telling us what the purpose of the world is. And therefore, people are presented with challenges. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows what every neshama needs, what kind of challenges. Some little ones, some bigger ones, some very horrendous ones. But it's all for the sake of the world to come. The whole purpose is, and the whole way to look at it is, not what's happening right now. But what's happening right now is availing me the ability to be able to have that eternal pleasure. And somehow the Rabbanu Shalom knows that my neshama needs this challenge. And it needs for a person to face it. And it needs him to either solve it, or to cope with it, or to change the venue, something. Because that's what that neshama needs. And only the Rabbanu Shalom knows what our neshamas need, what our neshamas are, and what's best for our neshamas for eternity. And that applies, if you give me 2 more minutes, I don't remember when we started. I don't like to steal people's time, because I have enough problems and enough averes, so I don't like to be a ganav either. And stealing time from people is not a proper thing to do. But I had an hour. Now, we didn't start at 8 o'clock. So I have at least another 5 minutes. Okay. I want to tell you something that's extremely important before we celebrate Hanukkah. I'm going to give you a marshal, and this will put everything we've said to a certain degree into perspective. I'll give you a marshal. Imagine somebody walking down the street minding his own business, and someone comes behind him with an iron pole and breaks both his legs. The man is now writhing in pain with both legs broken on the sidewalk, and the man with the iron pole comes over him and he thinks he's going to finish him off. And the man with the iron pole says, "Please, I mean you no harm. I am an orthopedic surgeon who needs practice. So I broke both your legs, and I'm going to take you to my clinic, and I'm going to heal you for free. And in 6 months, you're going to be walking like nothing ever happened." And he does that. He heals him for free, takes care of him for 6 months, and after 6 months, he walks out of the clinic like nothing ever happened. How much of a thank you does that man owe that orthopedic surgeon? Okay, zero. He owes him a lawsuit. Why? Because if you didn't break my legs, I'd be walking like nothing ever happened 6 months earlier, because nothing would have happened. You broke my legs. Why in the world do I owe you a thank you for healing me when you broke my legs? Okay, you got the marshal? Now we'll see the nimshal. We are going to celebrate Hanukkah and thank God for redeeming us from Tzoras Yavan, right? From the terrible problems that Yavan caused us, okay? Who got us into the Tzora of Yavan? God. Doesn't he run the world? Couldn't God have prevented us from getting into that Tzora to begin with? He could have, but he didn't. So who broke our legs? God. All of a sudden, God comes and he saves us from the Tzora that he initiated. Why do I owe many thanks? Don't put me into the Tzora of Yavan. Don't take me out of the Tzora of Yavan. Why do we thank him? Why do we celebrate Hanukkah or Purim or Pesach? The same question can ask on all of them. Now, I didn't come here to convince you not to celebrate Hanukkah. So there's an answer. The answer is my marshal's not a good marshal. Now I'll tell you the real marshal. Imagine a disease of the legs, which I created. I have a right to make up any marshal I want. That was one of the conditions that I made when I came here. Imagine a disease of the legs that has the following pathology. You get the disease and it incubates for 10 years. You don't even know you have the disease. Only an expert in this disease can see from the way a person walks that he has the disease. And at the exact moment of 10 years after the disease, you get the disease and it incubates for 10 years, the bones of the leg crumble and turn to dust. And the person remains a cripple the rest of his life and there's no cure. You can't replace the bones. They're gone. Now let's go back to the street. Man's walking down the street, minding his own business. He doesn't know that he has this disease. There's an orthopedic surgeon who's an expert in this disease walking behind him. Not only does he notice that he has the disease, but he sees that there's exactly 5 minutes left till the 10 years of incubation is over. And in 5 minutes, the man's bones are going to turn to dust. And he's going to be a cripple the rest of his life. There's only one way to cure this disease. You break the person's legs and reset the bones, and they grow back normal. What does this orthopedic surgeon have to do at that moment? He has 5 minutes. Find an iron pole and break the guy's legs pronto. And he does that. And he goes over to the man. He says, "You're a very lucky man." And the man says, "Could you explain to me why I'm lucky with two broken legs?" He said, "Yeah. Because in 5 minutes, if I hadn't broken your legs, you would be in a situation that is much, much worse. I'm going to take you to my clinic. I'm going to reset the bones. I'm going to heal you. I'm going to charge you for it. And in 6 months, you're going to be walking like nothing ever happened." Does he owe him a thank you now? For what? For healing him? Or also for breaking his legs? He owes him a thank you for breaking his legs too. Sometimes we need our legs broken, because we have done things that our neshama needs correction. It needs to be healed from diseases, spiritual diseases that we brought upon ourselves. And only the Rabbanu Shalom knows how to heal those diseases. So when the Rabbanu Shalom saw that the Jewish people were on a suicide path, and if he didn't do something drastic, the Jewish people would disappear like other nations disappeared. Like the Romans and the Babylonians and the Persians disappeared into history. But God won't let us commit spiritual suicide. So he brought the Tsar of Yavon on us to break our legs. And that aroused us to correct the situation. And when we came out, it wasn't that we would have been just as well off if we didn't have the Tsar. No, without the Tsar, we'd be worse off. So the Tsar was necessary. And then it accomplished what it was supposed to, and the Yeshua. That's in everybody's life is like that too. Sometimes people need a tzara, because if they didn't have the tzara, the result, if they just kept on the way they were going, would be spiritually horrendous, spiritually much more dangerous and much more harmful than having the tzara and being taken out of it. And that's why a nes is usually a miracle that save somebody from some kind of tzara. The nes is made of two letters, nun and samach. Nun is a letter of nefila, falling, and samach is support. We thank God for both things, the falling and the support. Both are necessary. And therefore, the Shari Tshuva says that when a person goes through a tzara and he comes out of it, so he should thank God not only for saving him from the tzara, but he should thank God for the tzara too. Because I needed my legs broken, and that would have, you hadn't broken my legs, things would have been much, much worse. But the fact that you broke my legs and you healed me, the two things together are what I'm thanking you for. And that's why on Hanukkah we have two things, Hallel and Hodah. Says the Sfas Emes, Hallel is to thank God for the Yeshua, for the salvation. And Hodah is an admission that I needed the tzara too. So all of the problems of life person has to be able to see that it's not only the Yeshuas, but it's the Tzaras themselves that somehow serve a purpose to awaken us, to arouse us, to a million different ways we're not even aware of. That the Rabbanu Shalom knows what's good for our neshamas. And even if a person has Tzaras that they can't deal with, and they fail, and failings, and things that come up in life where people fail. Sheva yipol tzavik v'kam. A person should never give up hope. He should realize that there's always hope, and that he can pick himself up and try again. There are many nisyonos in this world that I don't know if I would be growing up as a teenager in the world today. I don't know where I would have ended up. With all the taivas and nisyonos. When I went to yeshiva, the worst thing a guy could do is have a radio. God, today, parents would be happy if the children had radios. Let alone the things that you can carry around in your pocket and have terrible, terrible nisyonos. And many people fail and fall. But you shouldn't give up hope. You should go get help. Because lamaisa, every tzara that a person has, whether he puts himself into the tzara or not, can be used for the good if you take the effort to try to overcome it. And then, if you do overcome it, not only is the Yeshua beneficial, but even the tzara becomes something that strengthens you. And a person becomes stronger from dealing with tzaras and dealing with yesurim and even dealing with failures. But then you learn and you become stronger and you know how not to fail the next time. And it can go 7 times. A person shouldn't be embarrassed to be able to seek help if they're in situations where they need to recoup failures that they've had, spiritual failures, or whatever. I just want to end with one medrash that puts this whole thing, I think, into some positive perspective. The medrash says like this, Rabbi Akiva hayadoresh. Rabbi Akiva was giving a drasha, ubikshu atalmidim lenamnim, and his students began to fall asleep. Nothing has changed in 2,000 years. Ubikesh Rabbi Akiva la'orarom. And Rabbi Akiva wanted to wake them up. So he said to them the following, Ma rosa Esther, shemolcha al mea v'yeshem v'sheva medinos. What did Esther see that enabled her to rule over 127 medinos? Tavo Esther basbita shosara shechoysa mea v'yeshem v'sheva shonim v'timloch al mea v'yeshem v'sheva medinos. Let Esther, the great-great-granddaughter of Sarah, who lived 127 years, rule over 127 medinos. So they all woke up. What in the world is there a connection between Sarah's 127 years and Esther's 127 medinos, except it's the same number? And Rabbi Akiva went on. I have two other explanations of this medrash. The one I want to tell you is the following. When it says that Sarah Imenu lived 127 years, Chazal say it's not just 127 years passed over her, but kulam shavim l'torah, the tova. Every single year of Sarah Imenu was equally for the good. Now that can't be understood literally, that all her years were equally good, because they weren't. The 90 years she were barren wasn't the same as the 37 years she had Yitzchak. The night she was pulled to Paro or Avimelech wasn't the same as the day they made the bris for Yitzchak. So her life wasn't equally good, but it doesn't say that. It doesn't say it was equally good. It says it was equally for the good. That means that Sarah Imenu took every second of her life, good, bad, or indifferent, and she directed it to the good. She used it for the good. She was able to rule over every second of her life, no matter what was happening. She could take it and use it in a positive way. Esther Hamalka had a very miserable life. And think about it. Right, what's the dream of every Beis Yaakov girl? To grow up and be taken away by some shegetz, right, and have children by him who think they're goyim? That was her whole nachas, to be taken away from the Jewish community? Except for going to the king to save them, but otherwise she had no connection to the Jewish community. Esther. She had a really miserable life. She was basically imprisoned in a palace where she would not, that was not her dream in life, to marry Achashverosh and to have children from Achashverosh that basically were going. They were nice people. Koresh was a son of Esther who helped build the Beis HaMikdash. Nice guy, but that's not exactly the nachas that Esther was looking for, right, when she was a teenager. So she had a really miserable life. That's what Chazal say. What did Esther see? That the circumstances of her life were very negative. And yet she was able to rule over 127 Medinos and do very positive things and save the Jewish people and be Esther Amalka. Because she looked at Sarah and she saw that Sarah Imenu could rule over every second of her life and make every second into something positive. She understood that she has to live her life the same way. Said Rabbi Akiva, if Esther and Sarah could take negative situations and rule over them and turn them into the good, then you can stay up for the shiur too. Yeah, I know it's hard to stay up, right? Your eyes are when I'm sitting on that side, I have to hold my eyes open with toothpicks to listen to a speaker for anything more than 5 minutes. So it's not easy to stay awake when you're listening to a shiur. But it's not as hard as Sarah had it, and it's not as hard as Esther had it. And people have the ability to rule over their situations and to make the best of them. And you can make the best of the situation, even if you're tired, and open your eyes and listen to the shiur. That's what Rabbi Akiva told his Talmidim. And we all have that ability too. We're not going to avoid problems in this world, because the world was made to challenge us, to keep us on our toes, to make us active and dynamic, not to take it easy, but to grab what we can in those 15 minutes and create eternity. So if we understand that we have the ability to take every moment and turn it into something positive and turn it into something eternal, then every second of life, good, bad, and indifferent, becomes a opportunity, not just a challenge, but an opportunity. And people should grab at opportunities and use them the proper way. And in that way, we'll all be zoche to chayim tovim varuchim in this world, and the mirtz Hashem, the ultimate, which is the nitzchias, the eternity of Olam Haba.